May it please the Court. My name is Denise Greathouse, and I'm here today representing Ronald Love, the defendant appellant in this case. In light of the fact that Mr. Love's case will be remanded for resentencing because of the recent Supreme Court in Dorsey concerning the Fair Sentencing Act, I would like to begin my argument by briefly discussing other sentencing errors committed by the district court. In the event that Mr. Love's convictions are not reversed, his sentence should be vacated and remanded because the district court improperly included 42.525 grams of cocaine to Mr. Love's drug weight calculation when the evidence was undisputed that none of the participants intended to deliver any drugs on September 14th.
What did they weigh? What did they weigh, did you say?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You say the weight was incorrect. What was the correct weight?
It would have been the 7 grams for count one for the September 9th incident. They would have evidence of the defendant's intent for the count one, but however, they would not have the defendant's intent for count two, which was 42.52 grams.
The September 14th incident was a setup. As I understand the record, they set this confidential informant up for a beating for having, or on suspicion of having stolen from the defendant's drug house.
Yes, there is evidence that it was a setup for a beating. However, it's clear that it was no intent to deliver crack cocaine.
Right.
And due to the fact that it was no intent from the defendant or any of the participants, the district court judge should not have included that amount into the drug weight calculation.
You're right about that.
Just as the government pushed this case too far of trying to include this 42 grams into the drug weight calculation, the government also pushed this case too far by not providing sufficient evidence for a conspiracy conviction. The government failed to prove any conspiratorial agreement between the co-conspirators. The government failed to connect any of the general, vague, uncorroborated, disjointed evidence of a purported past drug dealings. To sustain count two, the government had to prove that a conspiracy existed to distribute crack cocaine, and that Mr. Love knowingly became a member to distribute crack cocaine. To meet this burden, the government had to show some type of conspiratorial agreement. Some of those factors to look at are illustrated in United States v. Cologne, United States v. Johnson, and those elements are paying commissions on sales, joint conduct in seeking out other customers, repeated sales of large quantity of drugs,
protecting a drug house. And punishing those who would steal from it.
Yes, Your Honor, that could be if there's evidence of the underlying drug house, which we do not have in this case. There is only one assertion that there's a drug house, and it came from the testimony of Acklin, saying that his cousin called him saying that his crack house was robbed. But there's no specific details regarding a crack house. We do not know if Mr. Love...
Acklin also testified, I thought, that he had been selling drugs for Love for several years.
Actually, the testimony is not that, respectfully, is not that he was selling drugs from Mr. Love for years. Actually, the question was asked to Mr. Acklin, have you dealt drugs with your cousin, Mr. Love? Acklin just responded with the affirmative, yes. The next question was, how long have you been in a relationship with Mr. Love such that you were involved in dealing drugs together? And then his response was 2 or 3 years. The problem with that, Your Honor, is one is based on leading questions and he's just answering them. And then two, we have no specifics again. We have no details. There's nothing there to tell this court or the jury what dealing drugs with Mr. Love meant. Is this a buyer-seller situation? Is this Mr. Love next to Mr. Acklin when he's selling drugs? Because there is, on the record, there is clear evidence that Mr. Acklin is a drug dealer. He has been convicted in the past of drug dealing. So the fact that one little leading question or two leading questions stated that he sold drugs with Mr. Acklin was just not enough based on case law, not based on United States v. Johnson or United States v. Cologne. So there was not a conspiratorial agreement with Acklin and Mr. Love, but then there's an assertion that there was a conspiratorial relationship with this person named Kathy. Again, the record is void of a lot of evidence regarding Kathy. The only thing you have is, again, Mr. Acklin's mere comment saying that Kathy told Mr. Love that his crack house was robbed. Nothing further. I'm sorry. I do apologize. There's one other statement as well. He said when the government asked him, who is Kathy, Mr. Ackland responded, Kathy works for Ronald. That's all that's in the evidence regarding Kathy. There's nothing specific, no details regarding Kathy's relationship with Mr. Love. Again, it's clear that United States v. Colon, United States v. Johnson, it explains what the government needed to show at trial to show a conspiracy. And it was not there, not with Kathy, not with Ackland. And then, again, with this crack house, it's, again, no information regarding anything regarding the crack house except for the fact that there may be a crack house. We don't know where that crack house is. We don't know what happens at that crack house at all. Based on this insufficient evidence, there was just not enough there for a jury to sustain a conviction for conspiracy.
Well, we've also got the testimony of the confidential informant, Cowart, who testified about having bought drugs from the person who turned out to be Love, used the nickname, and also Deloney's involvement. So you've got the same cast of characters showing up at the controlled buy on September 9th and carrying it out, and then the same group luring the confidential informant in for this beating on September 14th in retaliation for having stolen or allegedly having stolen from the crack house. Why isn't that enough for a circumstantial case of conspiracy?
Because the problem, just like in United States v. Stephenson, there was a situation where he was trying to protect the crack house so they had the competitor beat up. However, it was no question regarding the underlying drug enterprise there. There was clear that there was a drug conspiracy taking place. So when they went a step further, when the government went a step further with the evidence of beating up this guy was furthering this drug enterprise, it was no problem connecting the two. However, in this case, you have something different. You don't have the underlying drug enterprise. It's hard to say that they beat up the confidential informant for a drug enterprise that you have no evidence of, that does not exist.
Well, you've already acknowledged the testimony that is in the record about the drug enterprise, and admittedly, it's slim, but it's there. And,
yes.
You know, what was the jury supposed to think this beating was about, if not to protect the crack house and the drug operation? There's no other explanation for it.
Well, Your Honor, the jury was to be provided with the evidence that there was a drug enterprise, and that was the reason that they were beating up the confidential informant.
Right. I mean, but the argument you're making is a really, really good jury argument. It's not such a good sufficiency of the evidence argument.
When you go to sufficiency, Your Honor, when you go to sufficiency of the evidence, we're looking at what type of evidence would have been needed. And that goes back to United States v. Colon, United States v. Johnson. These are cases where the court was requiring evidence to be presented to show a conspiracy, not just general things, not just the fact that a defendant sells large quantity of drugs. That wasn't enough. You had to show specifics. You had to show details. You had to show paying commissions on sales, repeated sales of large quantities of drugs.
The problem in those cases is that those were buyer-seller conspiracy allegations, and that's not what we've got here. This is sort of qualitatively different. It's a different kind of a conspiracy case.
I respectfully disagree. If this court were to find that there was some type of evidence of a drug, for instance, Mr. Ackland dealing drugs with Mr. Love, and there was evidence of that in the record, then there was a buyer-seller instruction that needed to be given, because since it was so vague and general, the evidence was so general regarding the relationship there, the jury needed instructions. They needed the tool to determine what's the difference between a conspiracy, the elements for a conspiracy, and a drug buyer-seller situation. Without those tools, they will be confused, because the conspiracy and buyer-seller is such a gray line. The district court refused that instruction. And then they were only left to look at these vague statements to determine that it was a conspiracy, when in fact there was not enough evidence there. Your Honor, I notice that I'm going into my rebuttal time, and I would like to reserve that amount for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Greathouse. Mr. Kirchhoff?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Emily Kirchhoff on behalf of the United States. This is not a buyer-seller case. Defendant's reliance on Johnson and Cologne is misplaced. There was absolutely no evidence below that Love was selling drugs to or buying drugs from any of the alleged co-conspirators. This is a conspiracy case, and the evidence presented to the jury was sufficient for that jury to reasonably conclude that Mr. Love was involved in a conspiracy. Love argues that you need to prove lots of different factors to show a conspiracy. However, that's not the case. Those factors, cited once again in Johnson and Cologne, are to distinguish a conspiracy from a conspiracy to sell drugs from a simple buyer-seller agreement. And that is not the case here. You can have a conspiracy to distribute drugs with only one instance of distributing drugs. And here there was plenty of evidence to show that Mr. Love was working with others to distribute drugs, specifically the September 9th incident with Deloney. There was evidence, the confidential source repeatedly testified that he called an individual known as Black to set up the drug transaction on September 9th. There were three individuals at trial who testified that the man who went by the nickname Black was, in fact, the defendant, Ronald Love.
There was also testimony that Acklin used that alias?
There was testimony that Acklin admitted that he used multiple different aliases, one of which included Black. However, he was one of the individuals who testified at trial that Mr. Love went by the nickname Black. And another individual, Wallace Muhammad, testified that he knew Love as Black and that he also loaned Mr. Love the white SUV that was seen at both the September 9th incident and the September 14th incident. And the videotapes, the surveillance from the September 14th incident shows Love driving that white SUV. There was the September 9th incident, as I've stated, the confidential source worked with or called Love to set up that transaction. And then when he went to the place where Love directed him to go, Deloney was the individual that walked up to that vehicle and completed the transaction. In addition to Deloney's involvement in the September 9th transaction, he shows up again on the September 14th incident, as well as Robert Acklin. And Acklin testified that Love was the individual who called him on the morning of the 14th and said, "I need your help getting money back from a guy that had robbed my crack house." In addition to that testimony, there is, as this court has noted, Acklin's admission that he has dealt drugs with the defendant for 2 to 3 years. There is also evidence of the drug house. I disagree with counsel's statement that the only evidence of the drug house was Acklin's statement. There was also statements from the confidential source that the defendant called him on September 10th to accuse the confidential source of robbing his drug house. The confidential source also testified that during the beating that took place on September 14th, the defendant, Mr. Love, asked the confidential source or was making comments about the alleged robbery. The government believes that there is more than sufficient evidence in the record to establish the conspiracy conviction. The government also believes that the district court did not err when it refused to give the buyer-seller instruction for the simple fact that there was no evidence, as I've already stated, that Mr. Love was selling drugs to or buying drugs from any of the alleged co-conspirators. Moving on to another issue that was raised by the defendant, the admission of Deloney's statement in the video or question that asking the confidential source if he was with Black. That was not an abuse of discretion for the district court to admit that statement because there was no assertion within that statement or within that comment, I guess I should say.
How does that not constitute an assertion by Deloney that he's part of the conspiracy and is there representing Black?
Perhaps that could be an implied assertion within the question. However, the main purpose of the question was to confirm that the confidential source, Cowart, was the individual with whom Mr. Love or Black had set up the transaction. And in the Tenth Circuit, the Summers case that the defendant relies on, that is the only case where a court has found that a question wasn't actually a question, but actually that implied assertion was the intent of the speaker. Here, the government believes that this case is more like United States versus Long, where there was a question when a police officer picked up a phone, and that question was simply seeking information. While there could have been an implication here that Deloney was with Black and that Black was the one orchestrating this incident or this sale, that was not the intent of Deloney when he asked that question. And even if this court were to conclude that that was an assertion, the admission of the question was harmless error. Love did not contend in the district court that Black was not involved in these transactions. He simply contended that he was not Black. And there was more than sufficient evidence in the record, as I have already gone over, that Love was in fact Black.
How is that not the same thing, that he was not Black, so he was not involved in the transactions? The harmlessness, I'm not tracking with the harmlessness argument.
Okay.
It was an important piece of evidence.
It was a piece of evidence that the government sought to admit, and therefore we believe it had some import, I do not believe that it was the key evidence as Mr. Love tries to make it out to be. The statement ties Deloney with the individual identified as Black. And so any implied assertion in the question, you with Black, that is the purpose of that. However, the issue was whether Love was in fact Black. It was not that Black coordinated the transactions or arranged them. It was the identity of who Black was.
Right. That's just another way of arguing I wasn't involved because I'm not Black.
Correct. But so here there was sufficient other evidence in the record establishing that Love was Black. So the admission of that statement is harmless.
If you would address the sentencing argument very quickly on the drug quantity on September 14th.
The government believes that that issue should be reviewed for plain error because the argument that Application Note 12 precludes inclusion of the 42.525 grams was not raised to the district court. The only aspect of including that drug quantity in the final drug quantity was that Love argued that he was not involved in the crimes, that he was innocent of them, and therefore that quantity should not be included, and that there was an Apprendi error, that the jury needed to find that drug quantity. And the government believes that this potential error does not require reversal because the defendant's substantial rights were not affected. This court's case law is clear that you can convert drug quantity and into a cash amount or cash amount into drug quantity.
That's not what happened here, though.
But there was no evidence presented to the district court as far as that is what happened here, but we believe that that is a reasonable conclusion.
But that finding wasn't made. We can't very well affirm on that basis.
The government recognizes that this case will need to be remanded for the Fair Sentencing Act issue, and if this court would like for us to make more of a factual record on that basis, that is certainly something that we will do on remand.
So you want a do-over on that?
We acknowledge that the case needs to be remanded on the Fair Sentencing Act issue. So if this is an issue that the court would like more information on, we will certainly approach that in the district court on remand.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kirchhoff.
Thank you.
Great House, how much time does she have? 1 minute. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, just touching on a couple facts. One, counsel stated that the confidential informant discussed the crack house. That's incorrect. The confidential informant statement regarding Ronald Love was his spot. His wording was his spot. He never referred to a crack house. Robert Ackland is the only individual who referred to a crack house.
But he was accused by telephone call with robbing his spot.
Yes. The confidential informant did make testimony saying that Mr. Love made statements to him saying that his spot was robbed. That's correct.
And they were accusatory statements that cowered the confidential informant was responsible for it.
Based on his testimony, however, again, there was not enough evidence in the record to show that there were actually a crack house or the spot that Mr. Love was selling these drugs out of. And if Mr. Love was actually just selling out of this house by himself with no other individuals working with him to distribute drugs.
How is that not a drug house?
I'm not conceding at all that he has a drug house at all, Your Honor. I'm saying that there's no evidence in the record showing that he has a drug house. Moving to the buyer-seller situation, Your Honor, moving to the hearsay statement by the confidential...
Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, we thank you for your efforts.